Hey, Hawkeye fans, Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register, bringing you a Tuesday special edition of the Hawk Central podcast. And I am here with my teammate, Kennington Smith, who we got to experience your first Cy-Hawk week rivalry set of interviews. I don't know. They're usually kind of boring, but I think, I don't know. What did you take away from it today?
It was a good day of availability. I think that the players, whether they said it outwardly or not, that they're definitely excited to play this game. Mm-hmm. They've been looking forward to playing this game for a while, especially not having it last year. And I think that, there's definitely some added juice now to it. We've seen, the coaches poll, come out, and the AP poll. We have, a top 10 matchup, a game with national implications, and, in a lot of ways, the college football world is going to be focused in on the state of Iowa, and that's a huge opportunity, just for the football program and for the players involved. And I think that they're just excited about that. And, in some ways they were trying to play it down, but I think other players, outwardly expressed how excited they were to play in this game. And that makes it exciting for us as media members to be a part of that and to cover that as well.
Yeah, I think the rankings came out right about when the interviews started, or maybe a little bit after. But yeah, the Hawkeyes 12 and the coaches 10 and AP, Iowa State 10 and AP or 10 and coaches 9 and AP. First time they've ever been ranked together in the same when they play each other. They've never been ranked. Both of them ranked when they play each other, and let alone now they're top 10. So that's pretty crazy. But I guess before we get going too far into this, we did kind of bury the lead. You arrived at the availability less than 12 hours after your trip to your wedding. We need to our Hawk Central listeners want to hear about, of course they missed you for the Indiana game, and we missed you too, and we're glad you're in the press box this week. But how was the trip? We need to hear about what your thoughts were also on Georgia Clemson.
All right. Well, first of all, the trip was amazing. Got in on Friday, and it's like, it was a packed weekend of events. So the bride.
Now, is this in Georgia?
This is in Georgia. This is in Atlanta, yeah. So all of us who were in the wedding party, for the most part, went to UGA. The bride is East African. So we had, of course, like the rehearsal dinner on Friday. Then Saturday we had the American wedding, which is like, traditional American wedding. Then on Sunday we had her cultural wedding type event. So Saturday, we had the tuxes and the traditional wedding dresses, and that reception and all that went until like 12. And then the next day we were up because we had we had the cultural wear on, and we went and like participated in a ceremony, and we ate their tribal food, and we did their traditional dances all night until midnight again. And then Monday, before I got on the plane, there was a cookout that her family hosted. So it was literally just like back to back to back to back to back. So I am so sore right now. My body is so tired. There was a lot of standing, jumping, dancing, excitement. There was very little sleeping. But like, it was crazy because the wedding on Saturday, the traditional wedding, the reception took place during the Georgia Clemson game. So of course, all of us being alums, we have vetting interest in this game. So it's like, you want to be respectful to people's relatives, like older relatives, and people who don't really know about college football and all of that. So you want to be engaged in the reception, and you want to dance, and you want to act like you're having a good time, but at the same time, like, you want to look at your phone, like, what's going on with the
for sure,
right? Going on with the game, can we get some updates? But we have this tradition at Georgia called calling the dogs, which is like a chant that we do. And when we found out, like when we saw that, Georgia was going to win, like we just started just cheering, going crazy. We called the dogs at the wedding, which is like, that's going to be a memory that I think all of us are going to cherish for a long time. So
big game.
Yeah, good game. Fun weekend. And shout out to Georgia. That was a win that the program desperately needed. If anybody is not familiar with Georgia's program trajectory, this was a win that I think we needed, just mentally, confidence wise, against a team that, quite frankly, is in a position that we hope to be in. Clemson has won national championships. They have bested Alabama, which is something that Georgia hasn't been able to do yet. So I think that for us to be able to, you know, have the confidence that, you know, we could step on the field and play with Alabama, we had to win a game like that. Not concerned about the offense at all. We're going to be just fine. Our defense is going to play like that every single week for the rest of the season. So I feel good about where the dogs are at right now.
Okay, there we go. Good update, and sounds like fun. But I would say that you definitely don't seem like you're dragging to me. You're being. I was Kennington was texting me about the Iowa game, and also about you know, story angles this week during, you know, I think while he was on his trip, or so certainly excited about this week, this Cy-Hawk week ahead. I guess one quote that certainly has gotten a lot of traction. I did not actually think it was that crazy, but what Tyler Goodson said about this being the Cyclone Super Bowl, and that they haven't, you know, Iowa State hasn't won for a long time. That seemed to get a lot of people's attention. I think Iowa fans felt, oh, wow, someone's throwing down some shade, and Iowa State fans like, oh, hello, bulletin board material. I didn't necessarily see it that way, but I can understand any little thing on Cy-Hawk week is going to be magnified.
Right. I think that what he said was true, though. He made some points. I think that, though, you know, this is a huge game for both sides. I mean, of course, Iowa State, when you are, you know, let me choose my words wisely here. When you are the rival that hasn't bested your rival for several years, and traditionally you haven't been a strong football program, and now your team is in a position to, you know, really go a place where the football program has never gone before, and the way that you can catapult yourself into doing that is by besting your rival. This is, to this point, you know, one of the biggest games, you know, that the program has played. And this is
a
crucial game. Absolutely. For them. This is a game that could, you know, catapult them. And that's not to say if they lose this game, then everything that they've done up to this point, you know, is invalid. But this is one of those kind of stepping stone, monumental games, mm-hmm. that, you know, you could kind of build a legacy off of and build some momentum off of to win this game. For Iowa, though, you know, this is a huge game for them as well. We talked about this, you know, in previous podcasts leading up to this, and we've talked about this, you know, just outside before we came here to record, that, you know, a win over Iowa State is going to keep Iowa firmly in the top 10 for the foreseeable future. Until, you know, when we get up to the Penn State game, I think that will probably be the next time that they would see a team that, you know, we will be, you know, not worried about them losing, but that's a team that's on Iowa's level after this game. Yep. So they have an opportunity to, you know, kind of creep up into, you know, that top five, top four once you start getting into the playoff, you know, selection should they win this game. So it's huge on both sides. But I don't really think it's, you know, shady that he said they haven't won in several years. I think that's just, you know, kind of a fact. And I think that, you know, Iowa State side, this is a big game, and that this is something that they have circled on their calendar as well. So,
yeah. Well, let me just read the quote, just because I feel like it was not that explosive. But, again, I guess it's just what trips people's triggers. He said, "This is like their Super Bowl. They haven't beat us in a couple years. I think them being at their home place, knowing College game day is going to be there, is a good distraction for them and allows us to just focus on us." Which I think is, again, that's true. 'Cause, and you may say, well, it's not a distraction for Iowa State. You know, they just play the game. I was just playing the game. It's just for the fans. But there, from those that know how this works, there are a lot of media requests from ESPN, and all that goes to the home team. I mean, there's going to be a lot of extra media asks, a lot of extra time devoted to this. There's going to be interviews with Matt Campbell, I'm sure, taking him away from the preparation. I'm not saying that's going to be a factor of the game, but it is an added element of pressure. It's an element, absolutely, not something you're not used to. And I do think that that is not going to be exposed to Iowa City. I mean, there might be a few extra interviews, maybe, you know, with somebody. I don't know. But largely this Ames, you know, this game day in Ames is going to be an Iowa State-centered story. So I didn't think it was that big of a deal, but that's cool if fans everywhere want to think it's a big deal. And then you made an awesome point, Kennington, about this being such an important game for a team that has been on the other side of that rivalry, because you have to look, you can look no further than Iowa's story under Kirk Ferentz. His first four tries against Iowa State, he lost, exactly like Matt Campbell. Matt Campbell lost in 2016 in a blowout fashion. That team just wasn't ready to compete. But the last three times, they've been really close to the Hawkeyes. 17 was a triple overtime game. Or not triple overtime, single overtime. I'm thinking back to 2011 now. Single overtime game. 2018 was 3-3 in the fourth quarter. Iowa pulls away to win 13-3. 2019, of course, a one-point game in Ames. So that mirrors the 1999, 2000, 2001, 2002, the famous meltdown by Iowa and Kinnick in that 11-1 season, their only loss that year, to Iowa State at home. So our 10-1, I guess it was back in those days. But that was 11-1. I think it was 11-1. Anyway, and then Iowa in 2003 did come through and get that win, finally. And then ever since, it's been a pretty balanced rivalry. But it just goes, so will this be Matt Campbell? Will he get over the hump on the fifth try? We will, I guess we will preview that more on the radio show tomorrow. But I think that was kind of a top storyline today. What else today, from a Hawkeyes perspective, stood out? I think health-wise, it seems like the Hawkeyes are in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I think that's definitely one of the biggest takeaways. Charlie Jones went down late in that game. And, of course, Linderbaum went down briefly on the Peaches touchdown run. But Ferentz said, outside of players who we know for a fact will not play, like, you know, the Kyler shots, everybody else, you know, pretty much practiced today, which is encouraging. So, you know, we're expecting, you know, everybody who's not long-term injured to be ready to play. One thing that I am looking forward to, I should say, kind of previewing throughout the week, and something that was a big talking point today, is just like around the offense. And I think that how the game was played on Saturday, the offense did what they were supposed to do, and they executed well, but there wasn't that, you know, there weren't those flashy plays, there weren't those big explosive plays, there weren't those eye-popping numbers, and I think that people were kind of tuning into that game just to get a chance to see what the offense looked like. And I think in a lot of ways, just, you know, kind of how the game was dictated with how they just got out so early, there really wasn't a need for them to, you know, reach deep into their bag of, you know, of plays. So that's something that, you know, is going to continue to be a talking point. And the offense is a work in progress. They did what they needed to do, but, you know, players today said that they left a lot of plays out there on the field, which I'll be kind of diving further into as we get into the week. But, you know, offensive performance and, you know, what players' thoughts were compared to what maybe the stat book or the box score would say was something that I was definitely intrigued by today.
Yeah, and I think the theme is probably pretty consistent in Ames as well. In fact, reading our Register colleagues' coverage over there, interview with Breece Hall, you know, he says, I can't play any worse than I did against UNI. He averaged 3 yards a carry. It's his lowest number since becoming the featured back, for what that's worth. And he said, I just feel like as a whole we didn't play as well as we should have. Yet Matt Campbell says he saw lots of great things on offense. They just made a few mistakes here and there. So it kind of sounds like a similar type theme. Maybe two offenses getting ready to, you know, maybe they hit a few things in their playbook this last week. One thing we didn't see at all, not much anyway, from the Hawkeyes was Keegan Johnson, Arlen Bruce. No catches, just a one very late target for Bruce. They barely played at all. Certainly, I'm interested to see if guys like that are maybe sprung into action this Saturday. I think there's what other little wrinkles maybe would you be interested in, or you think might Iowa break out this week that we didn't see in the opener?
You know, I'm looking for, you know, maybe some more just like multiple wide receiver sets, just a chance for Peaches to really, you know, throw the ball downfield. I think that, you know,
downfield passing was a big topic.
Yeah, yep. I think it will be great for Iowa if, you know, Riley Moss or Matt Hankins or players like that could get pick sixes, you know, multiple of them very early in the game and just blow teams out, and you don't have to, you know, play you know, super aggressively on offense or do anything extravagant to score points. But, you know, this could be a game where you're going to need big offensive performances to win this game. So I'm looking for just, you know, more aggressive play calling, deep passes, and just like an expanded view of the playbook that, you know, we didn't get a chance to see in game one. I think that, you know, for what they were supposed to do, the offense passed, you know, the week one test. But I don't think that they were put in a position to where they really had to do anything, you know, extraordinary to put them over the top. I mean, they popped that big run early, and then Moss got the pick six on the next possession. And, you know, I wasn't in the stadium, but watching it over the phone where I was at, like, you could just kind of feel what type of game this was about to be. Like, you knew very early on that, you know, Iowa was going to dominate this game. And, you know, they could be in a situation where they're going to have a fast start again on Saturday. Maybe Iowa State is better at punching back than Indiana was. And if it gets into that type of contest where, you know, you throw a punch, Iowa State throws a punch, the offense is going to have to, you know, generate big plays, and they're going to have to put more points on the board. And it might be a more heightened sense of urgency than it was in the Indiana game. So that's, you know, kind of what I'm looking for is, you know, to see if there's, you know, some adversity or anything that's going to, you know, push Iowa's offense to put them in a position where they have to be aggressive.
Yeah, it's both offenses, I think, are just going to have be really hard-pressed to move the football. A lot of Iowa players today talked about Iowa State's 3-3-5 defense and just how difficult that is to go against. I'm sure one of us is going to be writing something about that later this week. But it is notable that the Hawkeyes have scored a total of 2 touchdowns in the last 2 meetings against Iowa State. You know, thankfully for the Hawkeyes, they won both games by scoring a total of 31 points in there, and that's by holding Cyclones to, you know, 20 points total. So one wrinkle I think I would want to see, we will hear more from Seth Wallace tomorrow as our assistant coach, and I certainly want to ask him about this, but I think this could be a big Justin Jacobs game, and you wrote about Justin last week, Kennington. I'd like to hear more of your thoughts on that because he played a pretty he played a good role on Saturday, but Iowa played a lot of 4-2-5. He wasn't on the field probably as much as he would want to be, but this week with Charlie Kolar, the All-American tight end, coming back, and Iowa State uses 2 tight ends a lot, you would think Iowa's going to be in that 4-3. And then we'll see a lot of Justin Jacobs. Maybe he is that weapon on defense that really helps neutralize the tight ends.
Right. And, you know, Ferris alluded to that in his presser today, that, you know, that's definitely a possibility. So, you know, I'm excited to get a chance to see Justin play in a live game. This will be my first opportunity doing that. I think it's an intriguing matchup for the Iowa linebackers, and I'm interested in getting Wallace's take on that. Not only that, but just, you know, their role and also stopping Iowa State's running game, which Indiana isn't known for, and they did do a good job of stopping the run when they were put into those positions. But the Breeze Hall, you know, we know what he's about. Brock Purdy is a capable runner as well. So those factors, along with the tight ends, you know, I'm looking to see what the Iowa linebackers are going to do with that matchup. And, you know, going back to your last point about offenses in general, Ferentz also said that, you know, he expects points to be pretty hard to come by in this game. He was very complimentary to Iowa State's defense. And, you know, he said, you know, in a conference that isn't really known for playing a lot of defense across the board, that's kind of Iowa State's identity, is they really take pride in being strong on defense. So, you know, it could be a slug 'em out kind of defensive 10-3 Georgia Clemson type battle.
Wasn't the only touchdown in the game defensive?
Yes.
Okay.
It was a pick six. So, you know, kind of expected something like that.
Yeah.
Definitely
could be. And obviously the fans element, guy going on the road for the first time, that'll be something we discuss more on tomorrow's radio show as well, and look at in our advances. One last topic, and I will plug my own story here, but I think it's actually really critical piece of this game, is the place kicker's position for the Hawkeyes. The Hawkeyes happen to have a kicker who whose dad is the number two all-time leading scorer at Iowa State. Sixth-year senior Caleb Shudak. His father, Jeff, of course, played for Iowa State from 87 to 90. Got to talk to Caleb for a while today. A lot of people did, but I had requested him, and I'm glad that they brought him. Such a neat kid. Very much leaned into his faith over the 5 years that he was waiting for his turn. And he said that has been a big part of shaping him as a person. And just he said he gets emotional thinking about the fact that on Saturday he will be kicking toward the same goalposts, you know, probably not the exact same, but yeah. In the same spot where his father kicked. So I think he made 58 field goals in his career at Iowa State. So it's not like he was a fly-by-night kicker. This is the guy that converted a lot of kicks over a lot of years. And cool story. And when you think about it, Cannington, I watched a lot of college football last week, first couple weeks actually, with really bad kickers. Yes. And we know the last time Iowa and Iowa State played, Keith Duncan hit 4 field goals. Iowa wins by 1 point. So kickers matter, and this is a really cool subplot. I'm anxious to watch it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, special teams are going to play a huge role. And if you're, you know, interested in Vegas lines, originally the line was like 7.5 or something like that. Now it's down to 4, 4.5. So, you know, they're
right
expecting
there, yep.
They're expecting this to be, you know, this could go down to, you know, whoever has the ball last. And if you have a kicker who is who you're confident in, and Shudak, who hit both of his field goals attempts last week. So he should be, you know, riding high with confidence off of that. You know, that's something that, you know, would make a pretty cool story if he was able to play a big role in that game. But, you know, weekly plug for how important special teams are.
Yep. We are special teams proponents on the Hawk Central podcast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would know, I mean, Georgia, our kicker missed a field goal very early on in that game against Clemson. And, you know, luckily for us, they weren't able to capitalize off of that. But, that, I mean, that's the difference between winning and losing, you know, something as something like that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And we saw it at the end of the 19 game in the Hawkeyes Cyclones game. A punt goes off the back of a Cyclone special teamer. Hawkeyes recover, clinch the game. Kennington, I know you got a radio interview here coming up. We will have more folks on our Hawk Central radio show on Wednesday, but want to get this subscriber pod to you as quickly as possible to kind of recap our media availability. Lots and lots of coverage coming up at hawkcentral.com over the next few days and already up on our website. So thanks, Kennington, and we will talk to you all later.